This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Early this morning, New York City police swept through Zuccotti Park, removing members of Occupy Wall Street from the camp they've held since September. Mayor Bloomberg said the protesters can come back after the park is cleaned up, but they have to leave their tents and tarps and sleeping bags behind. Since then, protesters obtained a court order allowing them back with their gear, but as of now, police have not reopened the park. Similar evictions have occurred in cities all over the country, forcing the Occupy movement to consider changing its strategy. But what strategy? What strategy are they talking about? The familiar single-issue activism and identity politics of recent decades have been overshadowed by the larger theme of economic justice. So what does it mean for traditional civil rights and social justice issues and causes? What does it mean to identify with a minority in a group that calls itself the 99%? With me today is Derek Johnson. He's president of the Mississippi NAACP, and Omar Ali is a professor of African American Studies at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Omar Ali, is this fundamentally a different kind of political movement than we've seen in the last 50 or 60 years?
Well, the way that I see it is in some ways it's part of the outsider movements that have been trying to agitate for change. So the civil rights movement was not a Democratic Party movement. The Occupy Wall Street movement is not, you know, looking to reform the Democratic or Republican Party. But there is a movement in America that's trying to raise the concerns of America's total population. And I would identify that as the independent movement, which is looking to transform the political process to make it more open. So yes, Occupy is one of the outside movements in America. It's not the only one. And I would argue that it's actually not as big as the larger movement, which is made up of 40% of Americans who say they're not Democrats or Republicans. So that's where I place my efforts and my attention.
You specialize in independent movements and black independent black politics as well, third-party movements. Mm-hmm. Is there a place in the Occupy movement for minority interest as we've understood them?
Well, you know, there's been sort of a debate, and I think that the black press has been in some ways taking the lead in saying that, you know, that the Occupy movement hasn't been very friendly to people of color and specifically to African Americans. Is there a place? Of course there is. There's African Americans have played a leadership role throughout American history, and I think it would do the Occupy movement organizers well to be as inviting of African Americans with the moral authority and the political authority that black people have had in terms of democracy movements. So yes, there is a place, absolutely, and I think that one can very easily say that the issues that Occupy is raising right now about economic disenfranchisement and marginalization have been affecting the black community disproportionately. So this is not a new issue for black folks. This is a long, long old issue that goes back to the days of slavery and the early days of emancipation. So there is an economic connection between the white progressives who are calling for economic, you know, parity in America, the corporate greed to be in some ways to be controlled, and African Americans' plight for economic and political justice in America.
Derek Johnson, do you feel that black people are invited or have a place in this movement?
I think the movement as we see it is something that's long overdue. Americans, black, white, male and female, have not raised critical questions around economic equity in this country. Occupy Wall Street has focused the attention in our economic infrastructure to show the vast inequities that currently exist. It is something that I appreciate has taken place because we're no longer talking about the Tea Party. We're talking about Occupy. Mm-hmm. In terms of space for African Americans, there's plenty of space. Occupy movement as it exists now, it is a decentralized a movement. There, Middle America is now speaking up and speaking out around economic issues that African Americans and other minorities have always talked about. So I think, yes, there's room for minorities. Yes, there's room for African Americans. And for me, I see this not as a separate movement, but a continuum around economic justice.
Well, I was going to ask you that question, but I'll ask you to amplify then. This is then, you think, a continuum. This is something that is very much a part of the, certainly Martin Luther King talked about it, but there were legal priorities. Just changing Jim Crow, we didn't have to address the underlying economic problems. You could get those laws changed. Now we're coming to some of the questions that he raised and others back in the 1960s. Is this a time for African Americans to reclaim this and to say this is essentially a movement we got going?
Right. If you look at not only Martin Luther King, if you look at some of the work of many of the intellectuals during the civil rights movement, but pre-civil rights movement, a lot of those individuals talk about the inequities of this country, not only in the laws as it was applied to African Americans, but the economic pie. Martin Luther King, most of his work was around economic justice. Mm-hmm. If you look at his writing, his book, Why We Can't Wait, the last chapter talks about the need to have a Poor People's March. And that Poor People's March was not just about African-American. It was about women. It was about Latinos, about labor. Unfortunately, in this country, individuals who sought profit and gain was able to brainwash working class whites for a very long time, particularly in the South, using race as a way to create fear or religion to appealing to individuals' values and as a way to peel off real support around the bigger question around equity, around economics equity, and around the quality of life, and equity around ensuring that individuals who perform a fair day's work receive a fair day's pay.
Mm-hmm. Omar Ali, you made the distinction earlier between the occupation movement, which I'd call sort of the activism, an activist movement, and those independents, those people who identify in this country as independents, which is growing towards something like 40%,
That's right.
Does the movement address some of the discontent that someone who identifies with independent must feel because they've almost by definition they haven't identified Republican or Democrat? Are these two movements in sympathy with each other, the activist and the less visible, less vocal?
I mean, I think both movements are fluid, if you will. But one thing is clear. The Rasmussen report just came out with polls that show that 91% of Americans disapprove of Congress and 83% of Americans feel that the country is going in the wrong direction. There is tremendous discontent with the political institutions of our country and specifically the two major parties. So there is in some ways some overlap between the two movements. But I think it's really critical to understand that the economic injustices in this country, the economic disparities are deeply connected to the political process. And what more and more Americans are saying, and it's not just African Americans, it's all Americans are saying, is that we need to have a greater voice. African Americans have traditionally been tied to the Democratic Party, at least since the 1960s. The first shift away from the Republican Party was during the New Deal in 1936, next shift in the 1960s. Since that time, most black people do identify with the Democratic Party, but most African Americans are recognizing the limits of not just the Democratic Party, but the two major parties. So about right now, 30%, between 25 and 30% of African Americans don't identify with either of the major parties. That's a very interesting trend, and it goes as part of the overall trend of the electorate saying we're moving away from these two major parties, which have been stifling our participation. So what African Americans are doing along with white independents is addressing some of the structural barriers to our political process. What does that mean? Well, we have open primaries in many states, but half of our states have closed primaries, which is in some ways what African Americans had to deal with under Jim Crow. See, independents are, in the law, second-class citizens. You have to get 20 times the number of signatures as an independent than you do if you're a Democrat or Republican just to appear on the ballot in all 50 states. Closed primaries exclude Americans. The way that the lines are districted discriminate against independents and non-Democrats and Republicans. So there are a host of ways that block Americans' participation. And if we want to change the economic system, we have to address it through the political system, I believe, and open up the process. And it's in the interest of politicians to support those in the short term because independents are the fastest growing group of voters in the state of North Carolina. 2 out of 3 new registered voters are unaffiliated and in the country.
Derek Johnson, what about that? There's a hint, certainly the theme of the occupation movement is a pox on both of your houses. We need to address this as a moral issue and address ourselves directly to the corporations that are causing the pain. What you heard Omar Ali say is the political process is still the answer. We just need to open it up to allow for a better, more robust debate and allow more people in. What approach do you think we ought to be taking and to what extent are African-American interests, to the extent that they can be embodied as one, better served?
Right. First of all, African-American interest is in many ways synonymous with American interest. If we have a political structure that promotes structural inequities, African-Americans are adversely impacted and in many ways more impacted. Mm-hmm. What happens in this political climate, we have to understand political parties are no more than vehicles. The Democratic Party for many years was the vehicle used by segregationists to maintain a structural inequity. The Republican Party has been used over the last 20 years, definitely, and it began to turn after the 60s as the part of the as the vehicle to maintain structural inequities. As African Americans, as Americans who are concerned around concerned with the structural deficits this country have, we have to figure out how do we realign, and that realignment may not be with either political party, or it may be with the political party. If you watch what took place during the 60s with the movement conservative, when they began to consolidate their power and they was able to, by 1980, put Reagan into place, that was in a realignment under a political party that was not always adverse to African Americans' interests, but it was hijacked by a philosophy, a libertarian type philosophy, that then used the vehicle of the Republican Party and the personality of Reagan to really begin to consolidate party in the South. That changed the tide. Mm-hmm. We have to be much more strategic in thinking about how do we use whatever vehicle is out there, be it an independent, Republican, or Democratic Party, to really address structural inequities as it exists.
We're going to take a break right now on the State of Things, talking about diversity and Occupy Wall Street. You're listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio, today talking about diversity at Occupy Wall Street. With me, Derek Johnson, president of the Mississippi NAACP. Omar Ali is an African-American studies professor at University of North Carolina, Greensboro. And Marcella Robinson joins us now. She's a member of Occupy Raleigh and an activist for mortgage fraud in North Carolina. Marcella, welcome to you. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Tell us first about the group Mortgage Fraud in North Carolina. Is that part of the Occupy movement? Is it related somehow?
Yes. Mortgage Fraud in North Carolina is in solidarity with Occupy Raleigh. We are a group of homeowners. We first originated in Raleigh, but we're spreading rapidly throughout the state to bring awareness and educate homeowners about the fraudulent activity that has taken place in our mortgages and the illegal foreclosures and evictions that our judicial and appointed officials are allowing the banks to do upon us.
You're also interested in a movement called Occupy the Hood, which currently isn't right present in this area, but it has started in other areas. Tell us about that.
Yes. Occupy the Hood has come about to bring awareness and also education in the African-American community and Latino community. There has not been such a majority of colored folks in our community showing up at the Occupy protests. And I believe we should be on the front lines for these issues that are taking place. So I'm very active and involved in the Occupy the Hood and Occupy Raleigh.
You've been active, as you said, in Occupy Raleigh. Why do you think there's low minority representation in that movement?
Well, systematically, we have been oppressed as a people. Colored people, I say, and therefore there's a lack of education as to the issues that are taking place in our community. And the only thing we need to do is just educate the color people of color as to what is going on so that we can bring about issues that potentially we are affecting our communities.
Derek Johnson, how do you feel about that?
Well, I think the movement is more organic than an organized process. I think African-Americans, if so inclined, should be a part of it. I really appreciate the movement because it puts a different face on economic questions. When you have middle America, white males saying, you know, there are some inequities here. I have a college degree. I have a PhD. I don't have a job. Or I have a job. I'm being underpaid or underappreciated. Or the extremes of profits that we see in corporations that are taking are really underdeveloping Main Street America. That's a good discussion. That discussion won't allow the issue to be marginalized because it's been marginalized by race or by gender or by ethnic background. It really puts on the forefront the economic inequities that we are all facing.
That puts it on the headlines. But are there barriers in this movement for people of color to actually participate in the activist side of it, in the occupations with the tarps, with the tents, with the sleeping bags? And does that matter?
Well, I don't think it matters. I think what we see is more of an organic, decentralized movement where individuals who coalesce with one another, socialize with one another, agree to take control of parks and demonstrate. African Americans have always shown the propensity to jump out and be on the forefront of social issues. In this situation, if African Americans not involved, that's not a negative. I hope more would be involved, but it is a positive that real social inequities are being discussed in ways in which it addressed the root cause of the economic inequities as opposed to a changing of a law. Because at the root of a lot of the social ills we see in this country is the bottom line. It is capitalism at its most extreme negative form.
And John Lewis, Congressman John Lewis of Georgia, seemed to feel the very same way. Famously it appeared that he was not allowed to speak at the Occupy Atlanta gathering. He had an appointment, couldn't wait his turn. They said, no, that's not how we play our game. He didn't speak. And then later was asked about that, about not being allowed to speak when he wanted to. And here's what he said.
This is the essence of democracy. We did this similar things during the early days of the civil rights movement, especially in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. We tried to reach consensus, and people had to work their way through an effort, and I understood it very well. I was not offended, and since then they have invited me to speak anytime, but I'm here in Washington, and I don't plan to be back in Atlanta for a few days.
Omar Ali, you're a student of these kind of movements. Is this a movement in search of an identity, in the process of making an identity?
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, they've been resisting having a singular identity. But, you know, to go back to what John Lewis was saying, and I think, I mean, everybody recognizes he's one of the greatest of American heroes, having led the civil rights movement on the ground. In some ways, his class of black Democrats have essentially helped to block further participation in the political system. And I know that that's not a popular way of talking about it, but I have to, you know, take issue with Congressman Lewis, because the fact is that the Democratic Party, along with the Republican Party, work together to discriminate against any outside voices. And that is a shame given the fact that it's been the outsiders that have propelled every single major reform movement in America. So I think that, you know, while I hear and respect, you know, John Lewis, I have to in some ways question and challenge in some ways what he has done on the ground, if you will, in terms of blocking further participation with the Republican Party.
In what ways?
Well, very concretely, legislation that would allow for more independents to get on the ballot. Right now, it takes 20 times the number of signatures for an independent to get on the ballot than a Democrat or Republican. The way that the lines are districted to favor either the Democrats or Republicans, they work together to give this district to this party, that district to the other party. Often the legislators are picking the constituencies before the constituencies pick the legislators. In a whole host of ways, the system that we are in is a bipartisan system, and yet more and more Americans are saying we do not like this way of partisan politics. In fact, people aren't calling for a third party. More people are saying we don't like any kind of political party. It seems corrupt to the democratic process.
Derek Johnson, what about that? Would progressive activists be better to spend their time focusing on the political process itself rather than the morally exhorting the corporations to change their ways?
I don't think so. I think once you focus too much on the political parties, you miss the greater point of the inequities. Going back to John Lewis' comment, understand John Lewis was a SNCC activist. And in Mississippi, for example, SNCC, along with other organizations, came under the umbrella of COFO. And out of that, they deliberated long and hard to determine what direction they would follow, who would speak to them on their behalf. There was a 3-day-long meeting to determine whether or not to invite whites from the North to come in for Freedom Summer. a part of that experience, it was a democracy in its most purest, truest form. And I think his not being able to speak in Occupy Atlanta, for him, that was an example of what he came through in, as being a youth being engaged. In terms of focusing on the political parties, understand that it took African-Americans a very long time to finally be a part of the political structure. And many of them did not manage that correctly. Many leaders did not manage that correctly. So, I say that's not the way to do it. But you understand that in this country, if you're not organized under some type of tent to leverage your political power, you're on the outside. And so African-Americans, when they finally got on the inside, they began to figure out, how do we play this game so we can maximize our opportunity? Now, there are a lot of individuals, unfortunately, who didn't think about the whole, and that's some of the problems we have. If we focus too much on the political party structure alone, we lose the inequities that's taking place. If we want to deal with the political parties, we need to deal with them in a way with how do we get corporate influence out of the political party system so it can be a true democracy and not a corporate democracy.
And a further note on John Lewis, remember when he was at the March on Washington, had a much more militant speech that he wanted to deliver.
That's correct.
And took direction from the leadership and toned down that speech and remained very active, didn't take his ball and go home. So he's a guy who's played by the rules and honored the notion of consensus through his entire career.
And because of that experience, that very next year in Mississippi for Freedom Summer, they would not allow those same people to come and influence how they would run Freedom Summer. So as always, this national leadership versus local leadership dynamic, and who's closest to the ground, who's listening to the people, or who's taking the reins of leadership out of their own self.
So, Marcella, how are these tensions playing out on a day-to-day basis in the Occupy Raleigh movement, for example? What in terms of, and I know you won't want to speak for the whole movement, what would you like to see happen? What would you like to see come out of this?
Well, first of all, I would like to see our leaders in the Black community and the Latino community to step up and address the issues that we are facing. I mean, the numbers speak for themselves as far as foreclosures, record number foreclosures all over the nation right now. Unemployment, they're not speaking about the true number of unemployment for the individuals, especially in the Black community. Unemployment is raising very high in the 20 percentile. Those issues definitely need to be addressed. I would like to see the leaders. And if I must say, a lot of people of color, African-Americans and Latinos, are quite disappointed in our leaders that are in a position of power and to do something, because they've given us false hope. We've come out to support them on numerous occasions, on numerous issues, and nothing has come about. You know, a lot of people, especially myself, I'm very disappointed with President Obama right now. I mean, there are a number of things that could take place as far as him enacting executive orders to help people of color. The movement definitely needs people of color, and we need, like I said before, we need to be on the front lines with these issues. So I would like to see more diversity in the Occupy movements. I would definitely like to see more participation in the decision-making processes that are taking place in the General Assemblies. And, just for us to unite as a people and stop looking at color. You know, I think that's one of the biggest issues we are facing. They're trying to divide and conquer us, and that is definitely happening.
But you do seem to suggest that there is a role for people of color who are in leadership positions for mm-hmm. precisely that mm-hmm. in those particular leadership positions, NAACP, for instance. Is mm-hmm. that what you're saying?
Yes, sir, I am.
So you want people to stand up and say, I represent a group of African Americans in this country, and I support this movement for these reasons.
Exactly. Definitely the people in position, especially within the NAACP, I respect the fact that they are fighting for numerous issues, and I do not say that those issues are not important to the African-American or the color community, period. But right now, we're in the fight of our lives as African-Americans. I'm a living testimony of that, fighting foreclosure with my home. We're in the fight of our lives with unemployment, foreclosures, and just systematic injustices that have been inflicted on us for decades. And we need to stand up, especially the leaders. If you have been elected or appointed, appointed as a person of color in a leadership position, you need to take a stand on these issues that we're facing and unite in solidarity with the Occupy movement.
Derek Johnson, you're president of the Mississippi chapter of the NAACP. Should the NAACP take a more visible, more active role?
Well, I look at the work here in North Carolina by Dr. Barber, the head of the NAACP, and the coalition he's been working with, HK on J, and economic inequities is a large part of what they're talking about. They understand that if you're talking about anti-immigration, anti-racism, and all those things, we're facing the same common denominator, in many cases, the same set of individuals who are trying to take the public policy in direction in which it creates a very inequitable structure, both in the social policy but economic policy. This is my work in Mississippi. The National NAACP, we voted in our October board meeting to support the principles of Occupy because of the inequities that's taking place. And, you know, African Americans, we are the canary in the mine when it comes to economics in this country. You know, if you look back 7 years, what we're looking at now, African Americans began to face over 7 years ago. So it's not that NAACP or African Americans have not taken a visible position on economic inequities. Occupy is an organic movement that individuals are now standing up saying this is wrong. Because NAACP is not there, don't mean we're not taking a stand against the inequities. But more importantly, it's a locale by locale scenario. If you go to Oakland, you're going to see a lot of more people of color because the individuals who organize it socialize together, and that's who came out. So it varies locale by locale.
If you look historically, Professor Ali, how these movements have coalesced, the progressive movement in the turn of the 20th century and again around in the 1930s and the movement that propelled FDR to make changes. Do they look like this in their early stages?
I mean, each movement looks different and it's specific to the movement and in the history of America. In terms of the populist movement, there were efforts to try to bring together black people in the South with white independents who had economic, you know, in some ways they could agree on their economic marginalization. How could they work together in the electoral arena? They decide to form a third party called the People's Party. In the 1930s, you see a slew of independent organizations trying to bring together African Americans and independents together. You know, to go back to President Obama, you mentioned, you know, the disappointment among a lot of African Americans about President Obama's record. Although there's overwhelming support still for him in the black community, people feel that, you know, he is in some ways he hasn't carried out his job adequately. And the reason why is because he came in essentially with an independent mandate. New York Magazine talked about him as the nation's not only the first African-American president, but the nation's first independent president. He wasn't supposed to have actually won, right? But he won because in the open primary states, he was able to bring together African-Americans with white independents, first to defeat Hillary Clinton, and then in the general election against McCain. So he came in with this mandate to be more independent, to be concerned with all Americans. But what happened is about 2 seconds into his presidency, he gave over his entire database to the Democratic Party, essentially believing that his charisma and his intelligence and eloquence would be able to in some ways go through and come over the partisanship. But what happens is that he stepped into an extremely bipartisan setup, which limits his abilities to actually push for reforms and changes.
Is it possible for a president to govern as an independent?
In this particular climate, no. Because the structure is set up. That's why I think it's important for people to focus in on the political partisan control of the two major parties. See, the parties are actually the ones who get lobbied by the corporations, not the other way around. So I would argue that the parties, the two major parties, are more powerful than the corporations. And the fact is that corporations are setting out to maximize their profits. We have some things in our system that we can do. We can petition, we can gather, we can boycott, we can do all kinds of things to apply pressure. So I think that one of the things that would be very important for Occupy and all Americans is to engage the political process and support candidates who want to see things open up a little bit more.
Of course, the feeling is that they may be more powerful as gatekeepers, but they're essentially owned and operated by the corporations that pay for their campaigns.
That's right. The Democrats and Republicans get equal amounts of money by the corporations. happens. But we can actually address this. And there's actually a national campaign right now, a congressional campaign, to look at the second-class status of independent voters in America that's being launched by independentvoting.org. And its local affiliate here is North Carolina Independence. So there are other movements right now trying to engage this issue, which are concerned about the economic disparities. But the question is, how do you get there? What is the strategy? What are the mechanisms to actually open up the process?
What are the conversations you've heard, Marcella, about party politics within the occupation movement?
Well, basically that the occupiers are fed up with it. A lot of occupiers don't, you know, support Democrat or Republican. We feel like the whole system is corrupt at this time. And I'm not speaking on behalf of them. I'm just telling you what I've heard, you know, within the loop and within the GA processes. We are very frustrated as constituents and as citizens of this United States. You know, never in my lifetime have I seen it where neither party can agree on any type of legislation for the support and the uplifting of the people. You know, it's very discouraging to even believe in your government at this time when, you know, so many injustices are being, you know, directed towards us as a people. The American Jobs Act, you know, specifically with the numbers of unemployment being so high, why can they even agree to, you know, fuel the economy by extending unemployment benefits? You know, that's a, you know, I'm terribly disappointed in that.
You know, I've got about 30 seconds left. Let me ask each of you if you think the Occupy movement is going to have much impact on the 2012 elections. And I'll start with you, Marcella.
Oh, definitely. I definitely believe that the Occupy movement is going to have a significant impact on the 2012 elections. We're already seeing the different parties trying to integrate into the Occupy movement and, you know, get a the sort of backing of their political party. And I tell you, it's going to be a trip.
Derek Johnson.
It's already had an impact. We're no longer talking about tea parties. We're no longer talking about libertarian ideals. We're now talking about the structural inequities that we see in our economic system.
Omar Ali?
I think they're definitely having an impact. I think that one of the things that we're starting to see is just how powerful outside movements are in helping to transform the conversation in America.
Omar Ali is an African, a professor of African American studies at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. Derek Johnson, president of the Mississippi chapter of the NAACP. Marcella Robinson is a member of Occupy Raleigh and an activist in the group Mortgage Fraud in North Carolina. Coming up next, how a Duke University freshman helps families in need by taking them fishing. Stay tuned.